Hey, welcome back to the Motivational Intelligence Podcast. I'm Sean Johnson. I'm your guide MC on this podcast where we study successful people and organizations, and it's our job to kind of deconstruct for you exactly what makes those people, those organizations so successful. And we want to tease out and deliver to you the tactics, the tips, the tools, things that you can actually apply to your life, your career, that will help you be more successful. So today we're talking with Dave Naylor about the five don'ts of coaching and mentoring. This is a hot topic that he gets asked about all the time. So we're talking about how most people look at coaching and mentoring as an event, but that might be a mistake. We're looking at what makes a mentor effective. What are the 5 to 7 high payoff activities of a great coach and mentor, and much, much more. So hope you enjoy this episode. As always, reach out to us, Too Logical, on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Let us know what you want to hear. Let us know ideas for people you think would be great interviews. And we look forward to hearing from you. Enjoy.
The Motivational Intelligence Podcast is produced by the team at Too Logical. Too Logical is an international corporate training firm and the world's leading expert in motivational intelligence, which is the ability to understand, manage, and change the motives people have. Too Logical offers over 30 different keynotes, workshops, and full training courses to small, medium, and large Fortune 500 companies in 53 countries, a lot of which you're probably familiar with. Pfizer, Bank of America, GE, Constellation Brands, P&G, and more. All solutions are completely customized, and the feedback from these sessions will blow your mind. If you have any training or speaking needs or just want to say hey, head over to TooLogical.com.
Mr. Naylor. We are back.
That almost sounded a little creepy.
Oh, boy. How are we doing, my friend?
Starting off well today.
Rough start.
There you go.
I did have a topic in mind today.
All right.
If you're cool with it, I wanted to talk about coaching and mentoring. Mentoring and coaching. It kind of seems like those get tossed around a lot. Kind of interchangeably.
Like peanut butter and chocolate or something
yeah.
like that?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, they go together pretty well.
I think that's a commercial.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's the Reese's peanut butter of the business world.
There you go.
So I wanted to kind of to focus our chat today on that. And, you know, like I said, it seems like those two, coaching and mentoring or coaches and mentors, a lot of times get tossed around interchangeably, like mm-hmm. they're the same thing.
Sort of like leadership and management.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's like exactly. The two words just kind of are, you know, like sisters to one another.
Right.
But oftentimes people, they don't really know the difference of them.
Yeah,
you know,
so there is a difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So let's start there. What's the difference?
All right. Well, let me kind of create a framework, and it'll help to understand. So, first we have to go to what is it that we're really looking to accomplish, right? As business leaders, let's say, or business managers, at the end of the day, we're all striving to get some kind of a business result. So whether it's getting projects done, getting strategies executed upon, achieving goals. You know, we're looking to achieve some type of result.
All
right.
Yep.
So I mean, we all universally agree at the end of the day, that's how our success is evaluated, right?
Yeah, that's what we're measured on.
And we inherently understand that if we can get our people to take the right actions, to do the right things, and to do the right things the right ways, by the laws of cause and effect, then we should be able to achieve those outcomes that we're looking for.
Sure.
And again, I think inherently we understand that. And then, so what causes people to, do the right things the right ways, or what causes people to do the wrong things the wrong ways? When you really look at a person's actions, what ultimately drives that is their dominant thoughts and beliefs, what it is that resonates in their head. you know, ultimately determines the actions that people will take or the actions that they'll resist taking. So
it's that little voice in their head that's telling them what to do.
Exactly. You know, so it's our, you know, our thoughts and beliefs drive our actions drive our results. So if we understand that that perspective, now let's talk about the coaching and the mentoring side. Mm-hmm. So what a coach does in their purest and simplest sense is a coach is an individual who focuses at that action level, you know, at, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of getting people to understand what are the right actions to be taking, and then helping people to develop the skill sets that, that would cause them to, you know, be able to execute the right way on those actions. So, sure. So coaches focus at the action level. The what a mentor does, in contrast, is a mentor very much focuses at that thought and belief level. Hmm. You know, and so it's really the interaction of those two that, that drives performance in an organization. Hmm. But your question, I think, is well placed, because, you know, so often I think as we go into organizations, it's, you know, you kind of see people think that a mentor is, you know, a person who's, you know, two levels above them in the organization, but not somebody they directly report to, or, mm-hmm. you know, in their direct, you know, reporting line or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they think of as, I think a coach is somebody that you hire from outside the organization that, you know, comes in and gives you advice and those kinds of things. And, you know, and neither of those things are necessarily true. You know, it's really the nature of what that person focuses on that you know determines what title they should have. You know, if they're focusing on helping us to take better actions and to learn better skills, then they're a coach. Mm-hmm. If they're focusing on shifting our thoughts and beliefs, they're a mentor. Yeah. And if you look at it from that perspective, really anybody could be. You know, I mean, your son or your daughter, your spouse could be a mentor if they're influencing what you come to think and believe. Anybody could really be a coach if they're, you know, if they're helping you to embrace certain skill sets that then are going to help you to, you know, to achieve better results in your life.
Yeah. Well, you know, it kind of makes sense. And as you were talking about that, it kind of made me think of, you know, just even if you listen to the language, even the emotion around how people will use the word coach or use the word mentor. A lot of times when they're talking about a coach, they're talking about, you know, you hear it much thrown around much more in a professional sense, mm-hmm. in terms of an executive coach or a basketball coach or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when you hear people talk about a mentor of theirs, it's less about, you know, they really helped me to develop this skill set or mm-hmm. something like that, but they really talk about them with such reverence. Mm-hmm. And it feels just like a much more personal connection to them, as opposed to, yeah, this was a, you know, I had a swing coach help me with my golf swing.
Right.
You're not going to talk about that same person the same way as somebody you refer to a mentor as.
Exactly. And you know, and again, that goes back to the level at which they impacted us. You know, so, you know, the reason that people talk about those mentors with reverence.
Reverence. There you go.
I blipped on that one. Senior moment. But the reason that the people talk about those mentors with such reverence is because they impacted them at such a fundamental level. I mean, they literally changed what we came to think and believe about ourselves, and because of that, we took different actions. You know, we looked at ourselves differently. We gave ourselves a differing level of permission. We were able to, you know, move past a fear or self-doubt that was holding us back, you know, and so it was that the fact that that person impact us at that very core, you know, thought and belief level. You know, we talk a lot about motivational intelligence, and you know, to no small extent, that's the domain that mentors live in. You know, they influence, you know, one's motivational intelligence. They help individuals to, you know, increase that awareness or increase that motivational intelligence, and thus people give themselves the permission slip to learn new skills or take different actions than they were taking before.
Yeah, Yeah, permission slip. I like that.
Yeah.
So if somebody wanted to be a great, I guess, well, so now that we've kind of defined the difference, maybe we can split these up and drill a little bit deeper. If somebody wanted to be a great coach, what makes somebody effective as a coach?
Okay. So we understand coaches impact at the action level.
Right.
And so one of the things, you know, over the years, you know, here at Two Logical and going into organizations and working with scores of organizations, you know, what we found, and it was interesting, a lot of the basis of this actually came from work that we did in GE back in the 90s. But, you know, what we found, you know, through the research is that in any given role that we have in life, this, oh, by the way, is both personal and professional. Mm. So in any given role that we have in life, there's always between 5 and 7 true high payoff activities. So, you know, it's a great term and it's a great way to kind of wrap your head around something. So what is a high payoff activity? Well, a high payoff activity is a core activity that one does that has the biggest impact on the metrics of success in that particular role. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's not to say that there's only going to be 5 to 7 things that someone's going to do in that role, but there's 5 to 7 mission critically important things that somebody has to really be good at if they're going to be successful in the role.
Which so, makes it much more manageable than, I got these 76 different things that are, you know, everything's getting flying at me, and what do I focus on?
Exactly. How do you prioritize 76 different things?
Right.
You know, and if it's 76 different things, then inherently people will, you know, they'll tend to gravitate towards, you know, whatever's making the most noise right now.
Yeah, sure.
Regardless of whether it's important. Exactly. Whether it's important or not.
Yeah.
You know, so much when we go into organizations, you know, we talk about the tyranny of the urgent, you know, and that, you know, if you look at a lot of people's schedules, they spend an inordinate amount of time, you know, fighting fires, fixing problems, running, you know, from this situation to the next, reacting to whatever their boss is making the most noise about right now, regardless of whether those are really the most important things or not, you know. And so a lot of times people, they just absolutely lose sight of the difference between what's truly important and those things that are urgent.
Yeah, and it's even more challenging now because you're getting hit with however many emails and text messages and Slack messages, and we're so much more connected that, you know, the reaction, you could just walk into the office and react to stuff all day long.
Absolutely.
And probably run out of time.
And you know, you go home in the evening and it feels like you've been running at 15 miles an hour on the treadmill all day.
Yeah.
But did you really get anything done?
Yeah, I hate that feeling. Mm-hmm. You're like, you leave, it feels like you put in a long day, and then you get home, you sit on the couch and you're like, what did I actually get done today?
Yeah. And I think, you know, we can all relate to that.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you're mentally exhausted, but you know, are you mentally exhausted because the day has been running from this urgent thing to this urgent thing to that urgent thing, or has the day gone simply because, you know, we just, you know, reacted to whatever's easiest for us in that moment, you know? So sometimes, I mean, let's face facts, people, they manage their time based upon their comfort zones too. So, you know, if it's easier for me to go and, you know, get lost in emails for an hour, then I may do that versus focusing on something that has a much greater impact, you know? So that plays out too. So, you know, circling back to the high payoff activities. So in any given role, there's always gonna be between 5 and 7 of those really mission critical important things that an individual needs to focus on if they're going to maximize their impact or maximize the results that they're going to get in that role. I remember a while back I watched a YouTube video from a University of Chicago professor, and he had just written a book, and I believe the title of the book was something to the effect of you know, everything you know, everything you need to know to manage your finances, you can write on 1 3x5 card. And, you know, kind of a curious title, but the guy, you know, the guy told the story about, you know, how he had, you know, taught, you know, finances at, you know, this great university for all these years, but he never really stopped and thought about, well, what causes a person to build a solid financial life for themselves?
Yeah.
You know, so he, you know, he went out and he started reading books on, you know, building a solid financial life, talking to people who'd built a solid financial life. And, you know, and as he was doing the research and he was doing the reading, he you know, started to realize that, you know, all these books and all these people were basically saying the same things.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, thus he came to the realization that, like, you know, people think, to your point, it's 76 different things,
right,
and thus nobody can really build a solid financial life.
Right.
And he realized that it's not really 76 things. You can actually take one small little 3x5 card and write down everything you need to do to build a solid financial life.
And that's it.
Yeah. And so if you, what he defined was the high payoff activities.
Yeah.
Of building a solid financial life for yourself. And that's true, you know, whether we work in an operational capacity, you know, within an organization, whether we work in a sales capacity, whether we work, you know, in an IT function, an engineering function. You know, if you look at a specific given role, there's always 5 to 7 key things.
Yeah, it's kind of like the fundamentals of the role.
Exactly. And so in order for somebody to be a great coach, the first thing they have to do is they have to understand, what am I really coaching to? And so looking at the role in that lens of high payoff activities, you can begin to see, okay, so what are those 5 to 7 mission critical things that my people, you know, really need to be a master of if they are going to have, you know, really maximize their impact in what it is that they're doing. They may do 30 things, but not all of those things are of equal importance.
Sure.
So what are those 5 to 7 things? And what that does is it creates a framework for coaching. Because now once you've got those you know, 5 to 7 prioritized things, then you can look at each of the individuals that you're working to be a coach on and say, okay, well, you know, where are they strong and where are they not so strong? You know what to focus on.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, it makes it so much more manageable.
Right. And if you think about it, you know, you talked about coaching earlier. You know, you talked about traditionally a lot of times when we think of the word coach, we think of sports.
Yeah.
And, you know, a sports coach absolutely does this. You know, if they're sitting there and they're a offensive line coach in the NFL, they know that, you know, for a right guard, these are the key things that right guard really has to be a master of.
Yeah.
You know, you go back to even in the days of Vince Lombardi, you know, and it was running, blocking, and tackling, were those core fundamental things that he focused on in every practice.
Yeah. I mean, like, even, you know, John Wooden, one of the greatest college basketballs of all time, huge advocate of do the fundamentals and do them well.
Right.
You look at Bill Belichick, who's won however many Super Bowls. That's all he talks about is just do your job.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's kind of the mantra with the Patriots.
And so that's the, you know, the first thing, you know, again, understanding what a coach really does, and a coach focuses at that action level. And then what are those key actions, or what are those 5 to 7 high payoff activities that you know, the person you're coaching really needs to be good at? What are the fundamentals?
Yeah.
And then that's what you really work on teaching them, you know.
Yep.
So A, they understand what they are,
yep,
and B, they understand what are the best practices of doing that, what's the right way to execute on that particular activity.
Yeah, so it gives you a framework for, okay, now I can evaluate this person, or even evaluate myself, but
right,
you know, if I'm coaching somebody, I can evaluate this person on these 5 to 7 things.
Yep.
And now I know what to focus on.
Exactly. Yep.
That makes sense. All right. So, how about a mentor? What makes, if we're at that action level with the coaches and it's, you know, using that framework of HPAs, those 5 to 7 things, what makes a mentor effective?
Okay. So, you know, this is really the much bigger question and the much more important question, because it's relatively easy to tell people what they should be doing. Yeah. It's even relatively easy to tell them how they should be doing it.
Yeah.
It doesn't oftentimes happen in business, but nonetheless, it's that's a relatively simple thing.
Yeah.
And if it was as easy as that, then you know businesses would be infinitely more successful than they are.
Yeah.
So we've got to come back to the question of, well, why don't people, you know, why don't they embrace high payoff activities? Why don't they, you know, why don't they practice those things? You know, if you can tell a salesperson that, you know, you need to be asking for referrals and you can give them a referral script of, you know, say this, right?
Yeah.
That, you know, and they just went and did it, it'd be simple.
Right.
But we all recognize that you can tell a salesperson to ask for referrals till you're blue in the face, but that doesn't mean they'll do it.
Sure.
You can tell them that, you know, you need to pick up the phone and make this many, you know, potential, you know, outbound calls or whatever it is, and that doesn't mean they'll necessarily do it.
Yeah.
And now we come back to what we talked about before, about the influence of those thoughts and beliefs. You know, our dominant thoughts and beliefs always drive our actions. And our actions by the laws of cause and effect dictate our outcomes. The challenge that individuals face, and as a result of that, we as business leaders, is that, you know, the vast majority of people we will meet, they have mental roadblocks that keeps them from embracing the actions. It keeps them from practicing things until they master them. And because of that, even if we do a perfect job as a coach, it's going to limit our effectiveness if we can't help people to overcome those mental roadblocks. And so you know, what makes somebody a great mentor is their understanding of recognizing what are the mental roadblocks that somebody has, because they're not always the same in everybody.
Sure.
And then helping people to be able to move past those roadblocks.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that makes perfect sense. There's I feel like a lot of times when something isn't getting done, whether it's in the business world or, you know, I'm trying to get into shape,
mm-hmm.
People use most of the time, not always, but most of the time, people know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
People know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
People know I should eat healthy and go to the gym, and they know how to eat healthy, buy vegetables at the grocery store,
yep.
and jump on the treadmill, but they don't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it makes a lot of sense that there's some other kind of force at play here. So in terms of the mental barriers of identifying what those mental barriers are and helping people to overcome them, that's great, but how do we do that?
Mm-hmm. There's the real secret sauce,
yeah.
isn't it? You know, there's been a lot of research, around that over the course of the years. I mean, you go back into the 1950s and you look at what McClellan did in Harvard and stuff like that, and it really ties back to the, you know, what are those kind of motivational triggers in us and mm-hmm. as human beings, and we've really, I mean, even going back into the middle part of the 80s, began to look at this as we were going into organizations, and so kind of pairing the research basis with the practical application of it. And what you find is that there's always, if you net it all out in its purest and simplest sense, those roadblocks will always exist in one of five areas of an individual. And so this is it's really the key to figuring out what is the combination that unlocks somebody, you know? And so we all have slightly different combinations,
mm-hmm.
but if you think about it, you know, let's say that combination has five numbers on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, those five numbers relate back to these five areas. So you got to figure out within an individual, you know, which one of these five levels or which combination of these five levels is gimping this person up. What are the roadblocks that are holding them back?
Sure.
So The roadblocks will always exist, either with regard to one's willingness to be accountable, mm-hmm. one's belief in their ability to be adaptable, mm-hmm. One's understanding of how to be resilient in life, one's willingness to take initiative, or one's ability to be able to move with courage in life. So the five variables that unlock a person are going to be accountability, adaptability, resilience, initiative, and courage. Hmm. And what one's dominant thoughts and beliefs are as it relates to each one of those categories. So if an individual is struggling, so inherently, remember what we talked about earlier, that a person's thoughts and beliefs always impact their actions. So, and you know, this is a whole conversation in and of itself, but inherently, if their issue exists at the accountability level, you're going to see that they make a lot of excuses and they spend a lot of time pointing fingers or placing blame or rationalizing why something can't get done or why a goal isn't realistic or why a strategy isn't executable or why a deadline isn't reasonable, so they get lost in a lot of very disabling behaviors.
Yeah.
If a person struggles at the adaptability level, what happens is you see that they tend to be very closed-minded. They don't listen well. They're not very reflective. When you try to give them feedback, they fight the feedback. They will exhibit a risk aversion, or they try to cling to, more of a legacy, way, the way we've always done things. Mm-hmm. If a person struggles at the resilience level, what happens for them is they will tend to get, if they're not immediately successful, if they don't very quickly get positive feedback or positive reinforcement, they'll default to, kind of a negative attitude about things. Mm-hmm. They won't be persistent, so they'll take a knee and they'll stay down if they're not very quickly successful. This also plays huge in from a learning perspective, because people struggle at the resilience level. Inherent in learning, there's always that learning curve that,
sure.
that people have to go through.
Kind of suck at everything at the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. It's just it's the reality of learning something,
yeah.
And so the way we become better at things is by practicing, right? Practice, reflect, adjust, and, keep practicing.
Keep going, yeah.
But what happens is if people struggle at the resilience level, they're not willing to practice enough. Mm. So they'll try something once or twice, and if they're not immediately successful, I can't do this. They get a negative attitude and they give up on it.
Yeah.
So that holds them back. If they struggle at the initiative level, what happens is they lack self-motivation, they lack drive, they lack passion and focus.
Mm-hmm.
So that holds them back. And if they struggle at the courage level, they get ruled more by their fears, their uncertainties, their doubts of things, and thus that fear and that uncertainty becomes their justification for not taking action.
Sure.
So you can begin to see how one or some combination of these five things, ultimately is what holds everybody back in virtually everything that they do in their life.
Yeah, I mean, it could be debilitating.
Absolutely. And so as a mentor, what really the crux of what we do is we look at individuals and we have to figure out, what's the Achilles heel of, of this individual. And then, we work on helping them to be able to, move past that, that mental roadblock that they hold in one or some combination thereof of those areas.
Yeah. Well, and it seems that's a really helpful framework where you're looking at, okay, these are the five areas, and each of those five areas kind of has symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of look, so that's kind of your diagnosis process, is looking at the symptoms, and you can draw back to what's the disease here.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. So for in that evaluation phase, they're they're looking at those, at the symptoms, and drawing them back to those five areas. What happens, or what do we do once we have, okay, here's kind of this person's Achilles heel, or here's their kind of motivational profile. Mm-hmm. What do we do from there?
Well, you know, from a mentoring standpoint, you know, it's really a process of shifting those individuals away from those limiting beliefs and getting them to grab on to, you know, more optimal or enabling beliefs. Mm-hmm. You know, so if, you know, if somebody is struggling at that, you know, let's just go, we'll go to the, you know, the first two. You know, if they're struggling at that accountability level, you know, you've got to get them to, you know, let go of, and we've talked about before in our conversations, that kind of victim thinking mentality that they've got, where they're rooted in the finger pointing and the blame and the destructive behaviors, and move that person to more of a fundamental belief in ultimate responsibility.
Sure.
So rather than pointing the finger externally, it's more of an internal, focus, and help them to raise their awareness to understand that, you know, the two things that each of us really have to accept responsibility for, and really the only two things that we control in life, are what we choose to think and what we choose to do, you know. So, and when an individual first becomes aware of, you know, am I looking at this, am I thinking about this from a framework that is, you know, that is debilitating or empowering?
Yep.
You know, are the actions that am I taking, are they, you know, are the actions I'm taking, are they ones that are moving me towards what I want or what I don't want?
Yeah.
And when an individual accepts responsibility for those two things, there's not a whole lot you can do that's going to stop them in life.
Yeah, sure.
That fundamental awareness too, from a business perspective. I mean, it's the most liberating thing that a person can really come to realize in life. I had a gentleman in a group here a little while ago who he likened that awareness of going from, you know, having a victim mentality to having a, that mentality rooted in ultimate responsibility as being the difference between living life in black and white and living life in color.
Hmm.
Because, you know, when you're living life in black and white, it's, you know, that everything's outside of your control. It's happening to you.
You're hopeless.
There's nothing you can do, you know. And so it's kind of that black and white,
bleak
existence. Exactly. And then, yet when one moves to the other side and they begin to think about, well, you know, am I really looking at this from the best perspective? You know, am I really taking the right actions? Now all of a sudden they put themselves in control and a whole new world of options opens up to them as a result of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, moving people from one side to the other, it is a process of getting them to let go of the limiting beliefs and grab onto more optimal beliefs. Decided that it takes a little bit more expertise than the coaching.
Sure.
But it also has a significantly bigger impact. You know, it's candidly in what we do in our leadership training processes that we bring into organizations, it's one of the biggest things that we teach folks is really those core tools.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, it's not as complicated as people think to do it. I mean, there's some really simple fundamental things that people can do to move people from, having those limiting thoughts and beliefs to having the more optimal ones. And, and it makes a very profound difference in a team when a leader really comes to understand what those tools are and how to apply those. And so that's, you know, it's easily 80% of what we do when we're going into organizations is helping them to understand, you know, how do you figure out what is the combination that's going to unlock the different people on your team, and then what are the things you do to really apply that to help people.
Yeah. Can you give us an example of, like, you know, even if it's, what's one easy way or one simple thing that somebody could do is you know, okay, I've identified that there's an accountability gap here, mm-hmm. that I need to close. What's one simple thing they could do to close that or start to shift it in the direction it needs to go?
Okay. Okay, so one of the things that we see a lot in when we go into organizations, looking specifically at that accountability thing, is managers in many cases, they actually are their own worst enemy in a lot of cases, because, you know, people will come to them with, you know, with a problem and they just kind of dole out the answers. Well, okay, that, you know, here's the problem, go do this, right?
Yeah, right.
And you know, and it creates this sort of codependence, yeah, you know, on a team. And there's a certain, you know, as managers, we can feel good about that because we pat ourselves on the back and say, oh, you know, look at what a great manager I am, because, yeah, I just helped you solve that problem.
Right, yeah, right? Exactly.
But they actually perpetuate more destructive behaviors by doing it. You know, conversely, what a much more productive way to handle it is to create more of what we call a no excuses policy on a team. Hmm. And a no excuses policy, it's not a no communication where you're trying to stifle people or something like that, but it's where, as a manager, we're just not allowing people to stop at an excuse. Now, you can actually create a no excuses policy really simply. In fact, all you really got to do is you ask three questions consistently. The first question is, you know, when somebody comes to you with a problem, is what exactly is the problem? Mm-hmm. Now, the ironic thing is when you ask that question, what you'll find is that in many, many cases, people can't even clearly identify what
they
the
don't
problem
know.
Is. Yeah, they you know, they just
something's
have
to, going on.
Exactly, you know. And so, how do you come up with a solution if you can't even identify exactly what the problem is?
Sure.
So, if we want to create a no excuses policy, we got to get first people to understand what really is the problem that we're facing here.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, in many cases, the manager may understand what the problem is, but our job as managers and leaders is to help our people to think, to help them to grow, to help them to, you know, to get them more mentally engaged in the process. So we could tell them what the problem is, but it's much more effective if we can get them to really think it through and figure out what the problem is, you know, from their perspective.
Sure.
So what really is the problem is the first question. Second question, what do you recommend that you do about that problem? Notice the change in pronouns,
yeah,
there, right? And so just by asking that question, you're empowering that person to, you know, okay, well, come up with an idea. What do you think you should do about it? What, you know, yeah, what? And so, you know, what exactly is the problem? What do you recommend that you do about it?
Yeah.
You know, so now you've got that person mentally engaged in coming up with a solution or a recommendation.
Yeah, and not only coming up with the solution, but also implementing the solution. What do you recommend you do about it?
Exactly. So now think about how what that changes in a person's thought process.
Yeah.
Because if I tell you to go do something, I own whatever I'm telling you to go do.
Yep.
Right? If you come to me and you say, hey, Dave, this is what I think I should do.
Yeah.
Now you own it.
Yep.
Right?
And that's a huge difference.
It's a huge difference. Right? So question number one is, you know, what exactly is the problem? Question number two, what do you recommend you do about the problem? Question number three is, are you empowered to put that solution in place? Hmm. Because, you know, from an organizational perspective, you know, we want our people to act in a more empowered fashion. But by the same token, you know, people oftentimes, you can tell somebody they're empowered till you're blue in the face, but they won't act in an empowered fashion because if I do it and I screw it up, what happens? And, you know, it's much, you know, but if you tell me to do it and I screw it up, then it's your fault, right?
Right, yeah, exactly.
And so, are you empowered to put that solution in place? And so now what you're doing is you're beginning to establish the boundaries for an individual. You know, at what level are they really empowered to put things in place?
Yeah, and it makes them think about it.
Right. And, you know, so now they begin to see, well, what really are those parameters that they're operating within?
Yeah.
Now, here's what happens when you know, we bring this process back onto a team. You know, what happens is, you know, you ask these questions a few times, people are going to very quickly realize that, okay, if I come to Sean and I, you know, with, you know, he's going to ask me
these three things.
Yeah. So mentally, you know, they will start to premeditate, you know, yep, the, you know, their thought process, because they know you're going to respond this way.
Yep.
So, you know, they'll, you know, so I'll come to you and I'll say, okay, Sean, you know, here's the problem, right?
Yep.
Here's what I think I should do about it.
Yep.
And, you know, and when I, but I wanted to check with you to see, you know, is this okay? Am I empowered? Right.
Right.
And, you know, in a lot of cases, they're just looking for the reassurance. They want,
yeah,
a pat on the back, like, yeah, that you're on the right track. Run with it, you know,
yeah,
and just give them that reassurance and let them go.
Yeah.
The, you know, in other cases, it may be a situation where they've come up with a solution, but it's not really an optimal one. Right.
Yep.
And, you know, in those cases, we have to fight the habit as managers to say, yeah, don't do that. Do this instead.
Right.
Right. Because, again, now we come back to that. I own it instead. Yeah, they own it. Right.
Yeah.
The, you know, so if they come back with a less than optimal solution, what we want to do is just ask them questions, you know, it's because if we ask them questions, we're getting them to think, you know. So, well, yeah, you could certainly do it that way, but if you did it that way, you know, what might be the financial ramifications of it, or how could that be perceived at a customer level, or how might that impact the operations group?
And sure.
So by asking those questions, you're getting them to, you know, think their solution through from different perspectives.
Yeah.
To come up with a more optimized solution.
Yeah.
And so you're really teaching them how to problem solve. You're teaching them, you know, how to you know, vet a problem to come up with an optimized solution.
Yeah.
So you're training them to think.
Yeah, very Socratic method.
Right. You know, and so you know, it's a simple tool with very broad reaching ramifications. And if you want to foster more of a culture of accountability on your team, just three simple questions, and you know, to begin to train people to think differently as,
yeah,
it relates to accountability.
Yeah. That's super helpful. So we talked about if I want to be a more effective coach, or I want to be a more effective mentor, you know, we've got a pretty good map of how that works. But I think it's probably fair to say, and correct me if you disagree, that no matter where you are in the organizational structure, or even age-wise, it probably benefits everybody to have a coach or a mentor of their own.
Oh, absolutely.
So if we're
it's
in
hard
that,
to grow in a vacuum, you know. I mean, we,
yeah,
you know, we're our own perspective is so limited, you know, and
yeah,
so, you know, we all see the world through, you know, through based upon our own reference points and you know, and our own mental filtering.
Yeah.
So it's impossible to have, you know, to be objective about oneself.
Yeah. Yeah. So you kind of need that sounding board and need that additional,
mm-hmm,
perspective. So how does somebody find one? How does somebody find a coach or a mentor?
Well, it's a lot easier to find a coach than a mentor.
Yeah.
You know, because coaching comes back to skill sets. So,
right,
you know, you can look at, you know, where am I struggling in terms of the skills, you know, side of things? What skills would help me to be more successful? And then, you know, go looking for somebody, you know, around you who, you know, has a level of expertise that you don't have as it relates to that given skill set.
Yeah.
You know, what I found is that most people are flattered if you come to them and, you know, and you say, hey, you know, I've been watching and I can't help but notice that, you know, you're really good when it comes to, you know, doing business presentations, or, you know, or Jim, you know, you know, it's really phenomenal, you know, how well you do when you're booking sales appointments or something. And, you know, if you don't mind, I'd really like to ask you some questions and learn a little bit more about how you do that. You know, so that for most people, they're pretty flattered when somebody asks them.
Yeah, they're gonna open up like a book.
Exactly. So, the finding a coach in that regard is a whole lot easier.
Yeah, just find somebody who's really good at it you're really good at it and ask them.
Exactly. Finding a mentor is a little bit trickier because, you know, mentoring takes a higher level of expertise. It takes a higher awareness level.
Right.
I don't remember if it was my mentor or his mentor who said this, but, he years ago made a comment that, you know, when the student is ready, the mentor will appear. Mm. You know, I think in finding a mentor, a lot of that is being at a point in our lives where we're willing to allow ourselves to be a little more mentally malleable, yeah. You know, in opening ourselves up to it. And, you know, and so when we're willing to kind of let down our defense mechanism, let down our guard, you know, acknowledge the fact that, you know, maybe we are our own worst enemy. Yeah. You know, those mentors have this weird tendency of kind of appearing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the other thing too is, you know, you go back and think about how we defined what a mentor does, and that a mentor influences our thoughts and beliefs. So, you know, anybody can really be a mentor because anybody can really influence our thoughts and beliefs if we're willing to let our guard down and really, yeah. You know, and be a little bit more perceptive. So, sure. You know, my son and daughter, they'll say things to me that, you know, you kind of step back and you're like, whoa, you know,
and so
they have the ability to be, you know, to mentor you in that regard, you know, by influencing your thoughts and beliefs.
Yeah.
But only if you're, you know, it's, you know, only if you're willing to bring your guard down, you know, low enough to, you know, to really think and be reflective about what, you know, what people are saying to you and why.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, for people that do have that higher level of expertise and that higher level of awareness where they could mentor you, they can tell when you're not going to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably a big part. I would think a big part of the reason why, you know, when the student is ready, the mentor appears.
Yep.
Is because mentor knows when the walls are up, and I'm not going to waste my time talking to a brick wall.
Exactly.
But when they're down, they can kind of sense it and tell.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm willing to invest in this,
yep.
in this person.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes a lot of sense. So let's translate this back for a minute to... the business world. What's your take on the state of coaching and mentoring in the business world?
It's pretty abysmal, actually.
Not great.
No. You know, it's one of the questions, and it's been amazingly consistent. I've asked a question of groups really are, you know, around the world at this stage of the game and in just about every industry. You know, when we go in and we're working with groups, I'll oftentimes ask, how many people here have ever had a great manager, a great leader, a great coach, a great mentor, you know, in your life.
Yeah, I've been at a couple of seminars where you've asked that. The answers are pretty astounding. They're very moving.
It's you know, when you're right. You know, so you know what happens is,
you know, there's not a lot of answers.
That's exactly it. You know, you know what you'll find is that in any group, if you ask that question, you'll have roughly about 10%. Of the people who will actually put their hand up when, you know, asked, you know, who here's had a really great coach mentor, you know, in your life, somebody who's, you know, fundamentally changed who you are today as an individual. So about 10%. And yeah. it's pretty consistent from company to company, country to country, you know, and industry to industry. And to your point, you know, for that 10%, when you ask them,
yeah.
you know, tell us about that person, right?
Yeah.
And the stories that they come back with, you know, I mean, you see a, you know, it's just a heartfelt, yeah. you know, this person, they, you know, they changed the entire course of my career.
Yeah, they get very emotional.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and they feel a lifelong commitment to this individual that, yeah. you know, even it might have been somebody who, you know, 25 years ago, you know, they worked for, you know, when they were yeah. just starting out in their career or something like that.
Yeah.
And yet you listen to them, you know, as they talk about this person, and it's almost like they're talking about, you know, these conversations happened yesterday.
Yeah.
And so the legacy that person left with them is very lasting and very, you know, and very alive, you know, in their mind.
Yeah. And they say like the things like they made me believe in myself mm-hmm. when I didn't. And it, you know, they changed who I was as a person.
Yep.
They pushed me to be better and all those kinds of things.
Oh yeah, you know, and they, you know, so the stories are incredible that you hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was with an organization here not too long ago, and one of our technology clients, and their chief marketing officer was mm-hmm. you know was in the room. And so I asked that question, and she was one of the people, you know, she you know, put up her hand, and she said, you know, she goes, I just graduated from college, and, you know, so here I am in my very first role out of college, and she goes, I had my first big project that, you know, that I was really kind of in charge of, and we were doing it was a direct mail campaign, and so we had a mail drop of, I think she said it was like 300,000 pieces of mail that wow. they were dropping. And so she had worked with all the, you know, respective parties internally. She had, you know, pulled it all together. They had, you know, they had an ad agency put together the, you know, the mail piece that was going out, and it was printed and all ready to go. And she said on the night before we were going to do the mail drop, she goes, I happened to grab one of those mail pieces and I looked at it. And she said, and I realized that the 800 number that we had printed on these 300,000 pieces of mail was wrong. And she said, it was literally like my world fell out from underneath.
Oh, yeah. Heart sank.
Yeah.
Oh,
so she said, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking like all of my hopes, all of my dreams have just
crushed.
Yeah. Vaporized, you know. And she said, one of the hardest things I ever had to do was to walk into my boss's office with that mail piece in hand and point out the fact that I hadn't caught it
yeah.
and the phone number was wrong. And she said, I fully expected that was going to be my yeah. last day at the organization.
Done.
Yeah. And, you know, so she's recounting the story and she said, and I'll never ever forget, she goes, my boss looked at it, recognized that the phone number was wrong. And she said she did not skip a beat. She, you know, didn't raise her voice. There was no anger, nothing. She just looked at it and very calmly said, okay, well, what do you think we can do about this now? and she said, I was just
not like, what she was expecting.
No, she said, I was floored. Yeah. And so she said we sat there and we brainstormed back and forth about, well, you know what, you know, and ultimately we, you know, one of us came up with the idea of, well, I wonder if somebody has that phone number, you know.
Yeah.
And so we decided to reach out to the telephone company to check and see, and you know, as it turns out, we were able to get the phone number that was you know. And so we quickly, you know, secured the rights to that phone number, and we were able to drop the mail piece, and everything was fine.
Wow.
And you know, and she said, I've never forgotten that interaction, and you know how differently that could have gone. And she said, you know, I learned so much from that experience.
Yeah.
You know, and she goes, and there's no way in the world that I would be today the chief marketing officer for a major technology firm.
Yeah.
Had that conversation gone differently that day.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you think about, like, you know, so if it's 10% of people, is it a coincidence that the chief marketing officer, the person in the C-suite that's been incredibly successful, obviously, was one of those people that raised their mm-hmm. hand and said, yeah, I had a great mentor.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't think, probably not.
I don't think so either. You know, I you know, because the reality is, you know, very few people are blessed enough to have, you know, perfect parents and perfect teachers and perfect influencers all the way through their life. And, you know, and thus by the time they come out into the professional environment, you know, they're perfectly wired.
Yeah.
You know, very, very few people are fortunate enough to, you know, to you know, have all of those, you know,
yeah,
those things go right.
Line.
Yeah. And so, you know, having the, you know, having that person by your side at some stage. And you know, I think you're right. You know, look at the you look at the ranks of the of people who, you know, become professional athletes, for example, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of times,
oh, there's always a story.
Oh my goodness! And you know, look at the environment that these folks came out of. And,
yeah.
You know, and you know, 99% of the people that come out of that environment, you know, they end up with lives that are, you know, significantly worse.
Yeah.
And yet there's that one person who somehow managed to rise above and,
yeah,
and you know, has built a successful athletic career. And then, you know, when you listen to their stories, they always talk.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You know, every that time. Teacher, that coach, that one individual who, you know, who made a difference. I was watching a, I think it was one of the 30 for 30s on sports on ESPN, and it was Herschel Walker was on it, and and you know, and he was talking about his background, and you know, and it was, you know, he's talking about, you know, I was this, you know, overweight kid, and people picked on me, and I was bullied, and that, you know, all this kind of stuff, you know, isn't and he literally talked about there was that one coach, and you know, and he just he didn't look at me as the fat kid, you know. And you know, and he said, he goes, and just the way that individual interacted with me, it caused me to begin to do different things in my life, and thus
now NFL great.
Right. You know, and so I think you're 100% correct. You look at I think there's very few people that rise to greatness.
Yeah.
That you know, did not have at least one person in their lineage that, you know, that helped them to begin to dial that combination and to get out of their own way.
Yeah. And yet, in the business world, 90% of people
don't have that.
Don't have it.
Yeah. And how sad is that?
Yeah.
You know, and it's not, I don't think it's for lack of wanting it.
Sure.
I just think it's, you know, you know, there's so few of those people that are out there that are, you know, that are really capable of having that level of influence.
Yeah.
So it's even though people want it, it's sort of like looking for a needle in a haystack.
Sure.
You know, so even if they're looking for it, they're likely not going to find it. And, you know, and they may not even have an awareness high enough to be looking for it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And you know, like we talked about a lot of people, you know, just haven't taken their guard down too, and that's a part of it. So if 90% of the people in the business world have not had a great mentor, a great leader, a great manager, I got to imagine that's causing some problems.
Well, everything's cause and effect in the universe, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. What are they? What's coming out as a result of that?
Well, you know, you look at some of the, you look at many of the biggest challenges that, you know, that when we go into organizations around the world, we see, and you know, you see the same consistent problems come up, and it ties back here. You know, it's you see, you know, organizations struggle with, you know, agility to you know, in terms of being able to, you know, move the way they need to move in this disruption economy that we're in right now, you know. So, you know, you're seeing the kind of the old line traditional businesses, you know, really struggling with the, you know, these technology upstarts and things like that, and you know, and how do they adapt? Well, that's a direct outgrowth of the fact that they have not created an agile workforce because they haven't coached and mentored these people the right ways.
Yeah, you know, that's a mental block for that.
Exactly. So, you know, so that's, you know, that's a huge problem. The lack of buy-in that organizations get, you know. Yeah. So they, so when they're trying to, you know, they're trying to drive change or trying to implement a new strategy, they're trying to, you know, drive down more aggressive goals or shift the direction that they're trying to move in. And they feel that organizational drag, you know, the resistance to that. That's a direct outgrowth, again, of a lack of coaching and mentoring that, you know, within their organization. There's been, a huge amount of research over the last handful of years about, you know, the costs of low engagement in organizations. And it's, you know, it's into the billions of dollars that organizations lose every year because they, you know, they don't have engaged employees. They've got people who are coming in and, you know, basically focusing on what's the least amount I need to do today so I don't get fired.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, so that that disengagement level, direct outgrowth of a lack of coaching and mentoring in the organization.
Yeah, well, there's this saying that, you know, people don't leave a company, they leave a boss.
Exactly. You know, and that goes to the turnover. You know, we have, I can't even tell you the number of times that, we have business executives who will come to us and say, hey, do you have a class on, you know, and leading millennials, you know, and because they, you know, they've got this perception that, you know, the millennial generation lacks loyalty and mm-hmm. you know, leaves organizations all the time. We can't get these people to stick with us, you know, and thus we're spending, you know, we spend a lot of money to, you know, teach these people, you know, how to be successful within their role, and then 2 years later they're gone, you know. And, you know, millennials are as loyal as any other generation to great leaders.
Yeah.
You know, where millennials aren't, you know, are less tolerant of than any other generation before is weak managers.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so, you know, and it's that lack of coaching and mentoring. If you've got a millennial who is in an environment where they, you know, where, you know, there's opportunity, where they're learning, they're growing, they're becoming better as an individual, they're being able to be successful within their role, they feel like, you know, they feel more mentally engaged, they're just as loyal as any other generation before.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think the difference, you know, we've talked about this, you and I before, but, you know, I guess the lower tolerance, I think, is also just a direct result of, they have more options now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, it used to be you lived in a certain city and there was 3, 4, 5 major employers and that was it.
Right.
And now with remote work and all that kind of stuff, you could work for any company in any country.
Exactly.
And so the tolerance of, you know, of a poor manager and leader is much less. Because I think, you know, I think that's a part of it is whether it's consciously or subconsciously, that's what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
That's what millennials are looking for. Yeah. But if they're not finding it quickly, right, they're going to go somewhere else.
They'll go someplace else.
Yeah, where they might be able to find it. And they don't find it there, they'll go somewhere else.
Yep, that's exactly right. And so again, it ties back to that fundamental problem of a lack of adequate coaching and mentoring.
Yeah.
Succession planning. You know, the...
Sure.
You know, organizations struggle in terms of having that, you know, that talent pipeline that they need, you know, or bench strength, you know, yep. you know, in the organization. And, you know, the only way you develop bench strength is by coaching and mentoring, by developing, you know, individuals and then, you know, creating an environment where people want to stay and grow within the organization.
Yeah.
You know, we have, boy, I'll tell you, you know, and this is particularly true in certain industries that we work in. The lack of knowledge transfer that they face. So they, you know, they have this, you know, the baby boom generation is getting to the point where they're actively moving into that retirement mode.
Yeah.
And they have gathered up all of this organizational knowledge through the course of their careers, but you know, there's been a really unsuccessful process of transferring that organizational knowledge. So,
yeah.
You know, so as these people walk out the door, they're taking that organizational knowledge with them, And you know, and that's another huge issue that is created by a fundamental lack of coaching and mentoring.
Oh, sure. I mean, with the baby boomers, you have massive, massive numbers of people that are going off into retirement. And then if you're also struggling to hang on to millennials for more than a year or two,
right,
how can you possibly, it's a ticking time bomb.
Right. You know, so all that knowledge, the wisdom, the insights, the experience that was gained.
Just vaporized. Yeah.
You know, so you stop and think about this from an organizational perspective. You know, really so many of the biggest issues they face, the root cause of that is that lack of coaching and mentoring.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to ripple into a lot of areas. So if there is this lack of coaching and mentoring, I guess, why? Like, why are there so few great coaches and mentors?
Well, I part of it's a legacy problem. You know, if only 10% of people, have ever had a great coach and mentor in their past.
I don't even know what it looks like.
Right. You know, so how do you replicate something that you have no picture of what it even looks like?
Sure.
You know, so I think that's a lot of it stems from there. And the other thing is that it, like anything else, any other skill set, you have to practice it.
Yeah.
To get good at it.
Yeah.
And so, I don't think that people have a clear enough picture of what it really looks like to be a great coach and mentor. And B, they don't practice coaching and mentoring enough to ever really get good at it.
Yeah.
And so I think those two, those two things create that kind of toxic combination that just becomes a very destructive cycle in organizations.
Yeah, sure. So what keeps people from practicing? Why, if deliberate practice, which I think everybody would agree is a huge part of becoming a great coach and mentor, mastering anything really,
mm-hmm.
for coaching and mentoring specifically, why aren't more people practicing?
It's an interesting question. I was talking to a VP of sales in one of our financial services clients just last week, and actually kind of about a very similar topic, And as she and I were talking, she asked me, she goes, why is it that, so many people struggle as sales managers, as sales leaders, she said, we promote people who are great salespeople to become sales leaders, but yet, for whatever reason, they never seem to make that transition, or rarely seem to make that transition well.
Yeah.
And I said, first and foremost, why do you promote your strongest salespeople to be sales managers and sales leaders? She said, well, because, she was saying that out loud, it's because we're hoping they're going to duplicate themselves, that they'll teach other people, how to be great salespeople.
Yeah, that guy's great or that girl's great, I want 10 more of them.
Right, exactly. So they're hoping that person will duplicate themselves. And I said, okay, how many of those people that you promote, do you think can really put their finger on why they were great? And she gives me this kind of stunned look, and she goes, probably not too many. And I said, so, stop and think about it. What really made them great? That they were willing to, they learned skill sets that others hadn't learned. So let's say they try to teach those people, well, just do this, but the person doesn't do it.
Of course.
And they don't know, how do I get them to do it?
Yeah.
Do I micromanage them? Because when somebody told me to do it, I just did it.
Right.
Right. And so, part of, I think, what stops somebody from, you know, from becoming a great coach and mentor is, first and foremost, they can't really put their finger on what made them great in the role in the first place.
Yeah.
And if they can't define that, how in the world can we expect them to replicate that in others?
Yeah.
You know, and so now it goes back to what we talked about in the beginning of our conversation today. You know, they have to, they, what made them great in the role, when you're really netted out,
yeah,
and I don't care what role it is, right?
Yeah.
Regardless of whether they were in an ops role, an engineering role, an IT role, a customer service role, a sales role, you know, they worked in a warehouse, it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
You pick any role. What really made them great in the role? It really comes down to just two things. They understood and they focused on the high payoff activities.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to move past those mental roadblocks. So they were willing to be accountable.
Yep.
They were willing to be open-minded and learn what they needed to learn to get, yep, good at those skill sets that align with the high payoff activities.
Yep.
They were willing to practice them enough to, yep, you know, to, so they had that mental resilience.
Yeah.
They had enough self-motivation to keep them moving forward even when they ran into resistance and issues.
Yeah.
And they weren't ruled by their fears and comfort zones.
Yeah.
So, you know, you if you put together the, you know, that right set of thoughts and beliefs, that right level of motivational intelligence in an individual, and then you create the clarity around the skill sets, that's what creates a peak performer in anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's you know, and if they don't understand that,
they can't possibly coach and mentor.
Not even exactly. You know, so you're it's like asking somebody to go in and do brain surgery when they, you know, they have absolutely no understanding of medicine.
Yeah. Here's a scalpel,
yeah,
go.
Yeah.
Go figure it,
yeah,
out.
Yeah. We wouldn't, you know, in a million years you'd never say that to somebody. You'd never pick some random person out in the airport lobby and say, "Oh, you're going to fly the plane today."
Yeah.
You know,
pilot's sick, you're up.
Yeah, yeah, it's your turn, right? In a million years, we'd never do that.
No.
But yet we do that for people in, you know, in management leadership roles all the freaking time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. All right, so they don't understand what made them successful. They don't understand those two things.
Yep.
What else?
I think that, you know... if you stop and you think about why do people do anything, right? And they, you know, people do things because they believe that if I do this, it's going to make a difference.
Yeah.
Right? So if, you know, and so it comes, you know, we manage our time really based upon, you know, I believe that if I take this chunk of time and I do this with it, it's,
yep,
going to get me some desirable outcome kind of thing.
Yeah, people want an ROI on their time.
Exactly. And so I think there's a, you know, you step back and you ask yourself, you know, if I really truly believe that, you know, by spending time in coaching and mentoring, by taking the time to teach this person, by taking the time to have that conversation about that, you know, with that individual, about that, you know, that mental roadblock that's holding them back, if I really believe that, you know, that's going to make all the difference in the world for this person, why the hell would I do anything else?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, so many, I think what happens for a lot of individuals, we talked earlier about that, you know how many people have you know ever had a great coach and a mentor, you know, somebody really,
yeah,
truly made a difference in their life, you know, that question.
Yeah.
And oftentimes I'll do a follow-on question and I'll ask you know, the groups, I'll say, you know, have you ever thought of yourselves in those terms? Have you ever really thought, you know, looked in the mirror and thought to yourself that you could have that level of impact on another individual in their lives, that you could influence them as much or more than anyone else in their life, including their parents? And you know, and it's one of those, you kind of see them like they almost lean back in the chair, yeah, like, because they never thought of themselves in those terms.
Yeah.
And so if we don't even give ourselves permission to begin to think of ourselves from that perspective, to really think that we could make that level of a difference in a person's life, we won't give ourselves permission to even go out and begin to practice those things.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, so it's being able to quantify what made them successful. It is, you know, beginning to believe that, you know, I'm worthy of, you know, that I can really do that, that I can make that kind of a difference in another person's life.
Yeah.
You know, that, I think that is decidedly the second thing that, you know, that keeps people from practicing becoming a great coach and mentor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes so much sense. It's just like anything. If you don't see yourself as that person, you're never going to act like that person. Yeah. You're never going to become that person.
Right. You know, a person who becomes a doctor because they thought about becoming a doctor. You know, a person who becomes an entrepreneur because they thought about becoming an entrepreneur.
Right. Like,
how many people really think about, you know, becoming a great coach and mentor?
Yeah. Yeah. Not many.
Yeah.
So they need to understand those two pieces of what made me successful. They need to believe that they are that person that they the time that they invest is going to, they're going to see a return on it. I think, it's a financial return in terms of career promotion, or my team's going to do better and all those things.
Right.
But also that's the, you know, kind of, I guess, logical reward.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine the personal kind of emotional reward of it is just as much, if not more.
Oh my goodness. Well, yeah, you're right. You know, stop and, you know, you think about, you know, think about the emotional compensation of making that kind of a difference in a person's life, and watching, you know, being able to sit back and, you know, and think about where somebody was, you know, 2 years ago,
yeah,
versus where they are now, or you know, 5 years later, you're watching how their career has progressed, and to recognize that, you know, you played a role in helping that person become who they are today. And
yeah,
you know, I secondary really only to be a parent, you know, is the satisfaction of knowing that, you know what, I made a difference there.
Yeah.
And so to be able to lay your head on a pillow and to know that in your heart, that's pretty emotionally validating.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, I mean, a few years ago, I have a younger brother that was, you know, we're a huge basketball family.
Mm-hmm.
And he was coming into his junior year, and as a sophomore, he's on the JV team, last kid on the bench. Like, didn't see any time, you know, never saw the floor. And I remember I would drive him out to summer league games before his junior year, and we would just kind of have chats, you know, going out and, you know, how you feeling about it and things like that, and you know, just see kind of little things about, like, you know, why do you think Michael Jordan was so good, why do you think Kobe is so good, why do you think LeBron's so good. And you could see kind of like week to week in watching his summer league games that he was, you know, because of where he was on the bench, he was coming in so timid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was getting the ball and he's got an open shot and he's a great shooter, but he's hesitant and he's scared, and so he passed the ball off and like, oh, that's not me, I'm not the scorer.
Right.
And it was, you know, you could kind of slowly see throughout the summer, like, okay, he's starting to get more comfortable, mm-hmm. and take more shots and score more points.
Yep.
And you know, he came into his junior year, ended up with a starting spot, lead scorer on the team.
Yeah.
And that's you know, he put in all the work, but that's such a cool experience for me to watch that evolution.
There you go.
You're
channeling your Phil Jackson, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The Zen master.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but it really is. It's, you know, that's obviously a very small example, but it's so, there's nothing quite like it.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing quite like it.
Yeah.
Okay. So what else stops somebody from becoming a great a great coach or mentor?
Well, all right. So, you know, they can't quantify what made them successful. Mm-hmm. They don't believe that they can really make a difference.
Yep.
We talked earlier, they just fundamentally, they don't know how,
Yeah.
So, people, if they don't know how to do something, then, inherently they shy away from those things that they, yeah. They don't know how. So I think very rarely, in organizations, we promote our strongest performers with the hope that they're going to duplicate themselves, but we never teach them how to duplicate themselves.
Yeah.
We never give them the tools to really be able to do it. So,
yeah.
In a lot of ways, what organizations do is it's sort of like teaching a kid how to swim by throwing him out in the middle of the pond.
Yeah.
And saying, okay, we're going to throw you into 10 feet of water here.
Figure it out.
Yeah, swim your way out,
Yeah.
And I think organizations do that all the time. They promote people, they throw them into the middle of the pond and say, okay, figure it out.
Yeah.
But they never take the time to really teach them the how of it. So
yeah.
they don't equip people to really understand about, well, how do you define high payoff activities? How do you communicate them? How do you
yeah.
set the right expectations around them? How do you create accountability, to those high payoff activities? How do you properly teach them? How do you reinforce that? So they never teach people that.
Yeah.
So they never teach them the coaching side of it. And they sure as heck never teach them the mentoring side of it. They don't teach them, what really are those five core areas that, either enable or disable a person.
Yeah.
How do you identify what are those, what are the mental roadblocks on the people on your team? What are those tools that you can use to help people to move past those roadblocks? So, organizations, the hardest transition that anybody will ever make in their career is that transition from being an individual contributor to, now being a manager or leader of a team.
Yeah.
And because it's what the skills that cause them to be a great individual contributor are absolutely 100% different than the skills
yeah.
that will make them a great manager.
Completely different job.
Right. And every other transition they make, the skill sets kind of progress and they scale.
But right.
but going from individual contributor to, manager leader, it's like you need an entirely new toolbox.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like that's probably why so many of them just they get promoted and they try to use the skills and the toolbox that made them successful as an individual mm-hmm. contributor. So they just are basically just trying to do five people's jobs for
exactly.
them.
Yeah. If Jimmy won't do it, I'll do it for him.
Yeah.
We see that in sales organizations all the time.
Yeah. yeah.
The sales manager, they have their salespeople who, you go out, you run the meetings, you find the opportunities, I'll come in and I'll close the deals.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because I don't have a freaking clue how to teach you to close the deal. So,
right.
I'll just do it. Yeah.
It's
I become the closer.
Yeah.
And so you absolutely so often you see people that they just they get promoted into a management leadership role and they just become the senior most doer on the team.
Yeah.
Because they don't understand how to help anybody else become a doer.
Yeah. All right, so they don't understand what made them successful. They don't believe they're going to get a return on the time investment that
mm-hmm.
it's worth their time. They don't know how.
Right.
Anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I think that again, going back to what we talked about earlier, when we talked about high payoff activities, you made the comment. You said, well, if there's 76 different things,
yeah.
What do I focus on?
Yeah,
right.
It's impossible to.
I can't prioritize.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I think that same thing applies to somebody, as a coach and mentor, is that if they don't have a framework of what to focus on,
yeah,
So if I don't have that framework of high payoff activities, coaching becomes a random walk in the park,
yeah.
right? I mean, I got no idea what to teach to the who when,
yeah, exactly.
Right? So that's totally random. And, you know, and God forbid we, you know, now we go down the mental pathway of looking at those thoughts and beliefs and the mental roadblocks of somebody, you know, so if I don't understand, you know, what is the, you know, what's the combination, what's the mix that, you know, that I need to focus on with this person versus that person, again, I won't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, I go back to the tyranny of the urgent. I'll focus on everything else because that's pulling on me more than the,
sure,
you know, the ambiguity of this side of things.
Yeah.
You know, so you know, they you know, they got to have clarity in terms of what really is the individual development plan that I'm working with this individual. You know, what are those, you know, what are those skill set pieces? What are the mindset pieces that I need to, you know, that I need to focus on with this person? And in what priority or what sequence?
Yeah, sure.
You know, because then with that, now they got clarity. You know, so
yeah,
now you can you got a plan or a process that, you know, you're progressively working with this individual on your team versus that one.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, you need a plan.
Mm-hmm.
So, if we put all those things together and we overcome those couple of obstacles, do we have everybody practicing to be a great coach and mentor? Or is there anything that's still holding them back?
Well, I think if you go into organizations and you ask managers, you know, why don't you coach and mentor?
Mm-hmm.
Right? The, you know, it, most of them, when you ask that question, there's no way that they're going to point to those first four things that they're not going to have an awareness level to say, well, you know, I don't know what made me successful, so
right,
I'm going to duplicate it, right?
They
don't have an awareness high enough to say, well, I don't really believe I can make a difference,
yeah,
right? You know, you'll never hear them say that. You'll,
yep,
you'll never hear them admit that they don't know how.
Yeah.
Or that, you know, they don't, you know, they, or, you know, own up to the fact that, well, I got no idea what to focus on.
Yeah.
You'll never hear them say any of those things.
Yeah.
What you'll always hear them say, I don't have time.
Mm.
You know, you know, that is the, it's the biggest excuse that people will use. I want to, they'll say. But I don't have time.
I just don't have time.
I don't have time. You know, I got too many meetings I got to do. I got too many fires that I got to fight. I got too many projects that I'm working on. I got too many reports that I got to do. Everything else is, you know, pulling on their time, and thus, you know, I want to do it.
Yeah.
But the organization isn't allowing me to.
Yeah. And the irony of it is, I have too many fires to put out. I have too many projects. Those problems are solved if you actually coach and mentor your people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. People hate to admit that they're their own worst enemy.
Yeah.
You know, people hate to, that, you know, they hate to accept the fact that the problems and the challenges that frustrate them the most in life are probably their own creation.
Yeah, right.
You know, but the reality is that, you know, that is true, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, so it's the, if, you know, people, if they earnestly believe that, you know, that something is going to get them a substantial return,
yeah,
they'll put time into it.
They'll put the time. They'll make the time.
Exactly. You know, it's like, you know, nobody has time to work out, right?
Right.
You know, yeah, it's, you know, I don't have time to go to the gym.
Yeah, I don't have time.
Right? But amazingly, some people figure out how to find the time.
Yeah.
And it's not that they're markedly less productive than other people,
yeah,
or, you know, that their careers struggle or something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, mentally they put weight on it.
Yep. That's important.
Exactly. And thus they do it. And they still figure out how to get everything else done.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, you know, the, and I don't remember the it was somebody's rule, I don't remember who it was, but you know, said how, you know, work expands or contracts for the amount of time that we allot for it.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh, it's totally true.
And you know, and you know, and I think that we, you know, the same thing is true for, you know, coaching and mentoring. It's, you know, we, you know, if we don't allot time, everything else will eat in and
yeah, it'll expand.
You know, but the other thing too is that I think part of the what perpetuates the I don't have time, excuse, is that people look at coaching and mentoring as being an event, right? Mm-hmm. They look at it as like it's, you know, I've got to be able to, you know, sit down with this person for, you know, an hour a day or, you know, those kinds of things.
They view it as like a meeting.
Right. And that's not really what it is. You know, if you really step back and you understand the nuance of coaching and mentoring, coaching and mentoring really comes down to those moments that, you know, that we have with individuals. It comes down to those more individual conversations. It's not about events. It's about conversations.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that we talk about, you know, as we're working with leaders is we talk about leadership moments. And the, you know, those leadership moments, they present themselves in every conversation that we ever have with anybody. You know, in those leadership moments, it's the moment in a conversation where you have that opportunity to influence that person's thoughts and beliefs. You know, so you can influence those thoughts and beliefs in a way that where you're maybe tying them more to the vision or the purpose of their role.
Yep.
You know, where you're reinforcing the culture that you're trying to perpetuate on a team, where you're helping them to see the significance of something they do, or recognizing them for, you know, something that they've accomplished, or, you know, where you're challenging a limiting perspective that they've locked onto. You know, it's that moment in time where you've got that window to influence what that person is thinking and believing. And it's not an event.
Yeah.
It's those few seconds in the conversation.
Well, you use the example before of a no excuses policy, you know, where that's a huge influence on how that person is thinking and what they're believing about it is, okay, what exactly is the problem and what do you recommend we should do about it? That's not a set meeting on the schedule. That's the person coming to you and saying, hey, there's a problem.
Right.
That's happening in passing, or they're knocking on your door.
Exactly.
And you got
it's
a
conversation
2-minute window.
In a hallway. It's a, you know, it's somebody poking their head into an office. It's, you know, and that's what people have to understand about great coaching and mentoring is that it's not an event. It's part of the, it's those leadership moments that they're really looking for.
Yeah.
I had I had kind of a funny one with my son here not too long ago. So my son's in college, and so he had one of the classes he has to take is an American history class, you know, he had taken some exam in this class early on in a week, and I was traveling out with clients. So later in the week, I'm talking to him one night from the hotel, and you know, we're just kind of getting caught up and stuff, so I asked him, I said, hey Ben, I said, you know, how did you do on that, you know, that American history class that that you had to take early in the week? And he's like, Dad, he goes, you know, I got a 78 on that test, right? Mm-hmm. And so you know, I'm kind of like, well, gee, Ben, I says, you know, 78. I said, you know, what happened? I said, you know, all through high school and stuff, you were getting high 80s and 90s in history. And I said, a 78. I said, you know, like, what, you know,
it's
what,
out of the norm.
Yeah, what happened, you know? And so he's, you know, he's sitting there, ah, Dad, he goes, you know, that test was on the Puritans, you know? And he goes, what the hell do I got to know about the Puritans for, right? He goes, you know, what difference is that going to make in my life? This isn't important, you know? And so basically he's justifying why, you know, it was okay to get a 78 on a test because it was an important topic anyway, right? So I'm on the other end of the phone, right? And I get up on the horse, right? You know, and I get up on, and I'm like, oh, Ben. I said, no. I said, the Puritans. I said, they played a huge role in the, you know, the shaping of our nation. And I said, you know, the reason we became an economic superpower in the world is because, you know, our culture was built on the Puritan work ethic. You know, so I'm up on the horse
about
the importance of the Puritans. You know, meanwhile, I'm sitting there on my computer and, you know, going, who the hell are the Puritans, you know? And the reality is I don't really care who the Puritans are. Yeah. But it was a really interesting thing that it happened, because the more I got up on the horse about the importance of the Puritans, my son goes from, well, Dad, you know, why the hell do I got to know about this?
Yeah.
To, you know, he goes, I didn't really study very much for that test, you know? And he goes, the test I've done better for. He goes, I put a lot more effort into studying for.
Yep.
So, you know, you notice what he did. He said, you know, he went from basically pointing his fingers outside of himself to, this isn't important, why do I need to know this?
Yeah.
To pointing his fingers at himself.
Yeah.
And really, you know, being accountable.
Yeah. And in a very clear-cut case of, this is what I believe, so this is what I did.
Right. And... you know, and that was one of those leadership moments. You know, it was in that window in conversation where I was able to influence what he was thinking.
Yeah.
And you know, and every time we talk to somebody, and it doesn't matter who we're talking to, if we're talking to our spouse, our significant other, whether we're talking to our children, whether we're talking to the, you know, the men and women on our team. Every time we are in a conversation with somebody, we're always given at least one of those leadership moments.
Yeah, it's the opportunity.
Exactly. And so, you know, that's that coaching and mentoring moment. And so, you know, so it's not a question of not having time. It's, you know, because we always have time. We're having those conversations through the course of every single day.
Yeah, you're already having the conversation.
Exactly. It's about having the awareness to be able to, you know, to look for those leadership moments and leverage them.
Yeah.
And it's you know, it's the aggregation, that, you know, the kind of accumulation of those leadership moments over time, that where you begin to, you know, be able to see and, you know, make a significant difference in terms of one's understanding of their high payoff activities, one's understanding what are the best practices of how we execute those high payoff activities. And one's ability to, you know, to move past those mental roadblocks that hold them back. And that's when you look at the best of all coach and mentors, you know, it's they recognize that it's, you know, in one singular conversation, I'm not going to categorically change all of these things in this individual.
Right. It's not going to happen in 2 minutes.
Right. But it's in the accumulation of those leadership moments that we can have a very significant impact on somebody.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a perfect place for us to end. Do you have any closing thoughts? Anything you want to share before we sign off?
I think the biggest thing is to recognize that great coaches and mentors are not born, they're developed. You know, and each of us has the ability to become a great coach and mentor. Each of us, we have the ability to forever change all of those people around us, to, you know, to shift a person's perspective, to help them to have, you know, greater clarity on what are the key things to focus on. You know, we all have within us the ability to do that. We just got to give ourselves permission to, you know, to practice it enough to get good at. And quite candidly, there is nothing that we will do that will reward us more in life, not just in our careers, but in our personal lives as well, than to practice and refine that ability, because it will enrich every relationship that we have around us.
Dave, thanks for the chat. Everybody, thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, one more thing before you take off. This is Motivational Intelligence Insider. It's just a very short, exclusive email every Monday that comes from Dave, John, and the guests on this show. This is the only place they share their very, very best stuff, and it's delivered right to your inbox every single Monday. This could include exclusive tips for upping your game, articles they're reading, videos they're watching, stories from the road, and on and on. It's the best way to kick off your week, and this content is comes directly from Dave, John, and the guests, and is only available to subscribers of Motivational Intelligence Insider. So if you want these guys and gals to email you their best stuff, go to twological.com/insider. That's the number 2logical.com/insider, and drop in your email. And if you do, I hope you enjoy.
The Motivational Intelligence Podcast is produced by the team at 2Logical. 2Logical is an international corporate training firm and the world's leading expert in motivational intelligence, which is the ability to understand, manage, and change the motives people have. 2Logical offers over 30 different keynotes, workshops, and full training courses to small, medium, and large Fortune 500 companies in 53 countries, a lot of which you're probably familiar with: Pfizer, Bank of America, GE, Constellation Brands, P&G, and more. All solutions are completely customized, and the feedback from these sessions will blow your mind. If you have any training or speaking needs, or just want to say hey, head over to 2logical.com.